Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. This is a special provincial election 2022 edition today, focusing again on Lanark Frontenac Kingston. And Thomas Mulder, the Ontario Party candidate for the riding, is with us today. Mr. Mulder, may I call you Thomas?
Yes, you may, Bob.
All right.
Thank I call you Bob.
Absolutely. No problem at all. Do you prefer Thomas, Tom?
For this, I usually go with Thomas. For my close friends, I keep it to Tom. But for this, it's just easier for me to remember where I am and for what sure. I'm supposed to be saying.
Yeah, for sure. Excellent. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We really appreciate it. Before we get into the election itself and where you stand, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Thomas Mulder?
Well, Thomas Mulder just retired as a veterinarian. For the last 30 years, I've been practicing medicine for animals, obviously. And 5 years ago, I sold my practice and really focused on working on dentistry for dogs and cats, and really quite enjoyed that. And then just past year, we retired and moved to the area, which has been my dream for years. I love this area. I started my career out in Gananoque, and just this area is beautiful. I was raised by Owen Sound, and that's a nice area as well. But the ruggedness of this countryside just was an appeal to us that brought us back here. And I was ready to sit back and enjoy retirement, but the current political environment, just I couldn't do that.
Well, we'll get into that in a second. What part of the riding do you live in, sir?
Just outside of Verona.
Oh, excellent. So yeah, beautiful area for sure. And we will talk about some of the challenges that living in this area poses as well. First, I want to just thank you for running, because this is something that, you know, it takes a lot of an individual to actually step forward and to declare themselves a candidate. There's so many people who have an opinion on things, but just refuse to step forward and do that. So thank you very much for doing that, sir.
Well, thank you. You're right. It's not an easy thing to get out of your comfort zone and get into the public eye like this. And again, when we're going door to door, knocking on doors and talking to people, the amount of apathy and frustration that's out there, and yet so few people actually take action. So many people don't even vote, which is very disturbing. And so, yeah, it's an honor and a privilege to do this, but it is a lot of work.
You talked a little bit, just a smidgen, about why you're running. Maybe you could expand on that a little bit for us, please.
Yeah. What I noticed over the last 2 years, it has disturbed me. As a veterinarian, I've done risk assessment, benefit and risk analysis, risk benefit analysis, rather, analysis of data. And when I saw how the government was handling some of the COVID issues, it left me thinking that they're making some mistakes. And I didn't agree with where they were going with the lockdowns again and again. And just so many different things made me say, look, I'm frustrated. I can't just sit back and let it happen. I need to make sure that these discussions happen during the election debate. And win or lose, let's get it discussed and make sure that we're all talking about it.
Okay, well, let's get into it then. What do you feel is the single most important issue facing residents of Lanark, Frontenac, Kingston? A tough question to answer, of course, because it is such a big riding.
It's a huge riding. From a day-to-day life point of view, I would say that the rural internet is one thing that affects everybody in the area. Even in the smaller towns, some of those areas are limited. But making sure that everybody has equal access to broadband internet is something that the governments of all levels have been talking about for a very long time. And unfortunately, we still are a long way from getting good access.
And you mentioned earlier, like, you couldn't do this interview at your home. We're doing this over Zoom because of that fact that the internet that you have there just isn't strong enough.
Yes, we had to get satellite internet where we were. And although the download's okay, upload and ping is terrible. You'd have me frozen several times over. So my understanding is that we need to make some big changes in both how the federal government sells off the wavelengths or the spectra for the area to make sure it's separate from the urban areas, so that the companies actually can achieve a profit without having to charge the moon for services. And then zoning and working together with provincial levels all has to happen to make sure that changes happen.
Being able to do high quality radio interviews aside, what do you see as some of the major benefits of expanding rural broadband and, by default, cell coverage as well?
Yeah, Well, over the past years, we've all become much more addicted to our Zoom meetings and such. And so there's a lot of people in the area who are working from home. One of the other issues that I think is a big issue is access to medical services. And through the big changes that happened with how COVID was handled, we have seen some benefits to remote access by internet for doctors as well. So I think between education, between doing personal research and social connectivity and stuff, it's an important thing all around.
I'm curious, sir, like you mentioned rural internet, a huge issue. There's no doubt about it. It's been in the spotlight for years. What about affordability? Because, you know, if you can't afford a house to put the internet in, what's the point?
Exactly. Yeah. And so that whole housing issue has become a huge issue for the riding, particularly up in the Carleton Place and Smith Falls area, as people have been moving out of the city this way, which then dislodges people further into the countryside. And I think also people like myself who moved to the area because of moving out of the other cities in Ontario. So there's been an increase in demand all over the province, and particularly in the rural areas where people now realize they can Zoom to work or telephone to work and stuff. So the housing demand is huge and the supply is low. And this problem didn't happen overnight. It could have been foreseen for years as the demographics have been changing and people getting closer to retirement and all the immigration that's been happening in Ontario. We get over half of the entire country's immigration to Ontario, which then goes mostly to our urban centers, which then causes issues there in terms of increased demand, which then again trickles down to our rural areas. So from a demand side, there's a huge increase, and supply just hasn't been keeping up between zoning restrictions and municipal issues there and rent controls, making it less attractive for people to be building housing for renting. And so we've had a limited supply and a huge demand. So it's a perfect storm. And people are having a hard time getting homes.
Affordability, as I'm sure you're well aware, goes way beyond just housing. Like we're looking at the price of food and goods as well. And a lot of that comes down to gas prices, because you have to pay to get those items here, whether it be by boat, plane, truck, whatever. The cost of gas through the roof right now. Tell me a little bit about the Ontario Party's plan to help with affordability when it comes to gas prices and maybe even food too.
Yeah, so a lot of the problems that we're seeing with gas prices does boil down to the same idea, increased demand and lack of supply. And again, we have had an artificial restriction of our supply because we have not made infrastructure arrangements to get our Canadian oil to our Canadian consumers. And so one of the factors that the Ontario Party wants to see is a streamlined transportation system from the West to get Canadian oil into Canadian customers. And as well, the whole taxes thing, the carbon tax obviously has been dealt with already. We're not in agreement with it, but it's been tried to the Supreme Court and we've lost that as a province. So are there other things that can be done to adjust the taxing? That's certainly things we're going to be looking at as well.
Talk to me a little bit about a couple of platform planks from the Ontario Party and how they relate directly to the people in Lanark, Frontenac, Kingston. I'd like you to take two that strike you as something that would be great in your home riding.
Well, I would say healthcare and long-term care as kind of a one topic thing, because they are so interrelated. We've had big issues in terms of accessibility into long-term care and the level of care available. We need to see some great reform to our healthcare system. Unfortunately, over the last number of decades, healthcare system has been neglected by all parties like the Liberals and Conservatives as they've been in power. They've left the system to kind of manage itself, leading to a top-heavy bureaucratic system that even on good days had bed shortages and surgery cancellations, emergency department gridlock, you name it, all of this before COVID. So we need to make some changes there and increase capacity in our healthcare system. The other thing that needs to change is it's not just doctors that provide our healthcare system. There's nurses, nurse practitioners, physiotherapists, And one thing that's been a big problem in rural areas is that with some of the pandemic restrictions and some policy changes, physiotherapy has only been available in the hospitals. So for people in the far reaches of the riding, they'd have to go, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours drive to go for a physio appointment. And that might need to happen two or three times a week if they can actually get an appointment. So we need to change some fundamental changes to get accessibility and then funding these providers in a way so they'll actually come to the area.
So, okay, so tell me this then. We've talked about rural internet. We've talked about increasing housing. We're talking about moving oil from one end of the country to the other and expanding healthcare, putting more beds in both long-term and hospitals. It costs a lot of money. Where does the money come from? You know, where does that come from? Are we looking at, if the Ontario Party were to be elected, would we be looking at more taxes?
No, the Ontario Party's view on taxes is that it should be a lot less than it currently is. We're seeing a lot of bureaucracy in our systems. The healthcare situation, for example, the average is, I think it was between 4 and 5% is administrative costs in hospitals. My wife worked as a nurse for years and certainly saw some of that bureaucratic nature of the situation there. So we believe that there is a lot of room to be made from a funding point of view by streamlining a lot of the services and then getting our government down to the core of what we need to be doing. There's a lot of things involved in government that need to be reworked to make sure that we're actually doing the procedures and funding the services that our people really, really want.
Alrighty. When you're out speaking with people and they see your hat or they see whatever, you know, the logo that you're wearing about the Ontario Party, and they say, well, tell me about the Ontario Party. And you only have like a minute or so to tell them. What do you say? How do you describe the Ontario Party to someone who is asking you that question?
Well, I say primarily we're a conservative party. And the Progressive Conservative Party used to hold the ground that we're carrying, but they have become very left-minded in a number of ways between corporate handouts and bringing in radical ideologies into the classrooms and things like that. So we would say we're a conservative party, that we stand on freedom, and that would be one of the key planks in our platform, because if people are free to make decisions in their family and in their churches and in their schools and in their healthcare, we believe that a lot of these problems start to sort themselves out. So typical conservative values in terms of fiscal responsibility, transparency, and that sort of thing. Myself, I used to vote conservative, but I believe that the conservatives have become so left-leaning that they really don't deserve to have that as the title anymore.
You talk about choice when it comes to your health care. What would be the biggest difference in the way that the Ontario Party would have handled the pandemic?
Yeah, so there's a number of really good studies that say if you educate people appropriately and let them make their own decisions, then they will choose good decisions by and large.
But not everyone will. Not everyone will.
That is exactly the case. Now, part of the problem I have with the way things have been handled is that we've been given limited choice when it comes to vaccines. And the vaccines that have been made available to us had very poor track record in terms of, they started out okay. I think it was around 80% against the original strain. But very quickly, the efficacy against Delta went way down to around 30%. And I've been reading data recently that it's less than 12% against some of the more current strains that are out there right now, Omicron and the variants. So there are vaccines across the world that actually have worked better than the ones we have available to us. And let people
like
make
which
their
ones?
Own decisions.
Sorry, it's just which ones work better?
I was reading a series of studies coming out of India, and they were showing 80% efficacy on the Delta variant at that stage. And what we've seen in India as well is that between both the natural exposure and early treatment regimes that they've brought in and the better vaccines, that they've been able to achieve a level of herd immunity that has stopped these recurrent spikes that we've been seeing here in Ontario and Canada.
So we've also seen the hospitalization numbers stabilize, and more importantly, the ICU numbers go down, you know, and we've been told by the health professionals, independent of government, that was the goal of these vaccines, was to, you know, as the efficacy did seem to wane and we required more boosters, that these vaccines are really meant to not prevent the virus in the first place, but to prevent us from getting really, really sick from it.
Yeah. Well, there's two things there that are really interesting. I'll first pick up on the one that I agree. I think this virus's goal is not necessarily to prevent infection, but to reduce severity, which has implications when we start talking about who should be getting that. If somebody is not going to get sick from it or has a very low risk of getting it, it doesn't make sense to mandate that for them and then claim after the fact that it's going to prevent the spread of the disease, as we currently are hearing with the discussions about vaccinations for your school children. But the other thing you mentioned that's really, I think, critical to me, when you said public health officials or medical professionals independent of government. Well, I'm sorry, there isn't very much of that going on. Any medical professional who dared to speak against the government narrative faced chastisement. I've spoken to doctors who've gone to court, who've lost their licenses because they dared to speak out against the medical directives of the government and the public health officials. So we haven't seen that kind of freedom of debate on the issues. And science requires that. Science is not a monolithic thing. Science is a discussion, and it's never actually settled. We're always on the quest for truth. And when we silence medical professionals and when we silence researchers and only let one side of the argument come out, that's a very dangerous thing.
Interesting take, sir. Couple more questions for you before I let you go. What would make you the best choice for MPP in this riding, Lanark, Frontenac, Kingston?
I'm not a politician, and I think that's actually a real plus. I'm a veterinarian. I have experience in assessing the medical side of things. I've run my own business, and I've had to make decisions that way as well. The big thing is I come to the table with a fresh set of eyes. And so I can be looking at things like the average person in Ontario is going to be looking at things. And instead of having a bureaucratic view of things, let's just say, let's work it through from first principles. And then let's act with integrity and freedom. That's one thing, again, that the Ontario Party is very strong on. When I'm elected, I represent my party, or not my party, my constituents. I am not required by a whip to follow the party line. So I will be free to represent my constituents. I won't be kicked out of the party because I disagree with certain things. And in this riding, that obviously has got some ramifications because we've seen what happens when parties stand against what the representative believes his constituents want, and with Randy Hillier being removed from the party, and you know, Randy does things Randy's way, and you know, he is his own person. But the fact that he was disciplined so severely, I think, is something that is shameful for our province.
When you last thing, and I'll get you to address our listeners directly with this one. When we talk about vaccines, you're in a riding where you've got 93% who've got, you know, they're fully vaccinated. Boosters are going out as well. This riding has really reacted by getting those vaccines. And you're not, obviously, you're not against the vaccine. You're talking about choices and being, you know, free to make whatever choice you decide. But speak to those people right now, those people who really have in droves turned out to get the vaccine, and tell them why they should be voting for you and for a party that is telling them something that's completely different from what they've been hearing for the past going on 2 years.
Well, a number of people I've spoken to and the research I've done shows that the voluntary rate of vaccination in Ontario is around 35% to 40%. And yet we've seen vaccine levels of around 90%. And that would tell me that we've seen a high level of coercion and extortion. I've spoken to people who've been threatened with their jobs, threatened to have their pensions removed, and not able to get EI if they were let go from their jobs. Those people are, they feel betrayed. They've been abused. Coercion in that sense should never be part of our health policies. So people getting the vaccine because they believed it was the right thing for them to do, that's great. People who got the vaccine because they believed what I would say is not true information, that they're getting the vaccine protects somebody else. There's just no evidence for that and hasn't been evidence for that for the beginning of the pandemic. The vaccine should reduce the severity of the disease for that individual, but it does not stop the spread. And very early data showed that. So when governments have been forcing people to get vaccines in the name of stopping the spread, that's just not true.
Sir, I'm sure we could go on for another hour, you
I'm
know,
sure we could.
talking about all of these things. But again, I want to thank you for running, and I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us here on Lake 88. I really enjoyed our conversation, sir.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Our guest today on In Focus, Thomas Mulder of the Ontario Party. He is a candidate in Lanark, Frontenac, Kingston for the election that we are in right now. Now, tomorrow, our election coverage shifts to Leeds, Grenville, Thousand Islands, and Rideau Lakes as we welcome the Green Party of Ontario candidate, Fiona Jagger. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.